Welcome to Healthy Outcomes, brought to you by Baker Tilly, bringing you the latest trends and hottest topics in healthcare. Baker Tilly is a leading advisory, tax, and assurance firm dedicated to helping healthcare organizations explore ways in which they can win now and anticipate tomorrow. Let's go there.
Hi, my name is Mark Ross, and I'm the leader of Baker Tilly's healthcare provider practice. Joining me for today's Healthy Outcomes podcast is Kevin Holleran. Kevin is a senior director at Fitch Ratings, an international credit rating agency based out of New York City and London. As our audience likely knows, investors use, in the healthcare space specifically, and even broader beyond the healthcare space, they use the ratings assigned by Fitch as a guide when making certain investment-related decisions. Kevin last joined me for a podcast. He was a guest on a podcast we did in March of 2023, and Kevin did such a wonderful job, I thought I would invite Kevin back to our podcast annually to give our audience the Fitch perspective, because I do truly believe in the hospital healthcare system space, the senior living space, you know, the CCRC, continuing care retirement community space. When Fitch speaks, I believe people listen. They pay a lot of attention to what Fitch, you know, Fitch says, what Fitch's perspective is on things impacting the industry. So, Kevin, welcome back to our podcast. Thank you for joining me today.
Mark, thanks for having me. These are always fun to do. So I always look forward to our dialogue and discussion. This will be great.
You bet. So before we dive too deeply into our dialogue, Kevin, can you give our audience, I know I did high level Fitch in my intro there, but can you give our audience a little more background on Fitch and the work that Fitch does in the healthcare system space?
Sure. So Fitch is one of the main rating agencies that's out there, depending upon if you count Kroll or not, there's three or four, Moody's and S&P being the other two. We are out there and completely not related to the entities that we rate. We are, I sometimes say, a little bit like the good housekeeping seal of approval. We give our information out there and lets people make an investment decision. Do I want to invest in this? Do I want to sell it? Do I want to hold it? What do I want to price it at? But we ourselves do not partake in that in any way, shape, or form. Inside the healthcare space, we're all part of a big group called USPF, so United States Public Finance. And inside the healthcare space, we sort of break ourselves up into hospitals and health systems. And by the way, I use that phrase interchangeably. And then long-term care, which we call life plan communities or LPCs. A lot of people still call them CCRCs, all really the same thing. We've got about 250 or so hospitals and health systems and about 160 or so life plan communities, LPCs. So it's a pretty big portfolio. And we've got staff located literally across the country. And I appreciate your very kind comments about people reading what we're putting out there. We've got a wonderful team. And look, I get to kind of be the chief storyteller on a lot of these things. But there's a whole group of individuals that do their best to make me look good when I do these things. So we appreciate that.
And actually, one of your colleagues, Kevin Margaret Johnson,
yes,
was a guest on a podcast I did a few months ago talking about the life plan communities and Fitch's outlook there. And she did, a wonderful job for us here on the podcast. So let's dive into it. Primary challenges. And last March of 2023, Kevin, we did talk about the primary challenges being faced by healthcare systems, you know, over the last 12 months. Again, that was back then. And I'd like to talk to you about that now. So as we look at the last 12 months, and then maybe look forward-looking, the next 12 to 24 months, what are the primary challenges being faced by systems? Have they changed much since the last time we spoke in March of 2023?
It's a real interesting question. I think if you even go back, you know, a little bit further than the last 12 months, we sort of internalize, you know, what's been happening in the sector. Let's just talk really about hospitals and health systems. And we say we move from, you know, a pandemic and us figuring out how to handle that as society, let alone providers, to what a lot of us is sort of called the labor-demic. And the labor-demic sort of reared its ugly head in 2022 and affected just about everybody that we rate. And I often tell people the median operating margin in 2022 was 0.2%, which means effectively 50% of the individuals that we rate, and really they're great organizations, they're name brand places, right? Couldn't make a profit on their book of business because they're spending so much on what we call external contract labor. Now, that's alleviated a little bit in 2023, but labor still dominates really the discussion. You know, I used to say, look, if I had an hour of time to talk to a CFO and do an annual update, in 2022, I spent, you know, 58 minutes talking about labor. Now it's maybe 48 minutes. You know, we're still talking a lot about labor. But to your point, as it's settled down, and it has settled down, we're seeing more hires and return people than people who leave. If you are using agency, you're using less of it. It's costing less per hour, per unit. And a lot of people say, hey, we're basically back to sort of pre-pandemic levels on our use of external contract labor. The trade-off, however, has been we've sort of upped the salary, wage, and benefit line to keep our permanent employees in place. And so that expense base has jumped up, but revenues don't jump up, you know, commensurately with it. And so that delta really is what we're fighting right now. Two things on this. It will take time to make those lines spread apart a little bit more. And that's going to require, you know, annual increases from the payers and continuous cost cutting and cost savings and productivity initiatives on the side of the providers to sort of keep that delta between those two lines. But I also think that, to your point, you really alluded to it, it's almost kind of what's old is new again. So we're not focused on the pandemic as much as we used to be. We're not really focused on labor-demic because it's settled down so much. But what we're really focusing on right now is what I call basic blocking and tackling. So access issues, how do I get people in? And that's a good way to, you know, compete with your customers. I get you in much faster than my competitor can, for example. And then, you know, simple, just sort of staffing to volume and things that we've been doing in the sector for a long time. It's almost a little bit of like, I can do this. This is normal, you know, blocking and tackling. I can do it, but it's still not easy, right? This is not a business where people make 10% margins. We're making 2 or 3% margins. We're extremely happy with this. So it's a tough business to be in, but I do see that light at the end of the table, a tunnel, and it's not another train headed our way. There is light that's coming out, coming our way.
Got it. So again, reflecting back on our prior discussion, Kevin, providers, and you mentioned the median operating margin there was up 0.2% in 2022. That was one of the most challenging years, I think, from your perspective, the healthcare systems had ever experienced. And we thought at that point that they would rebound, I don't want to use the word rebound significantly or improve significantly, maybe in that next 12 to 24 months. And although there's been some incremental improvement, as you said, on the labor side specifically, which is such a big issue, the improvement probably hasn't been what we expected it to be, right? Just because some of these issues still persist. Like you said, yeah, maybe nurse agencies or the use of agency is down a bit, but elevated salaries, I mean, the new normal here are these elevated costs on the personnel side of things, which again, is just contributing to operating challenges, I will say. Does that make sense? Again, the improvement maybe wasn't what we expected it to be.
It makes complete sense. And we've been saying for a couple of years that we sort of call it the 75-75 conundrum that's out there, meaning 75% of your expenses, labor and supplies, have been under extreme duress. They're very elastic, if you will. And when they go up, there's no commensurate buffer, if you will, on that 75% of your revenues, which is usually Medicare and, you know, Medicaid and even places you can negotiate commercial contracts. It's very limited sort of wiggle room, if you will. So we're sort of subject to the whims of the market, so to speak, on our expenses, but we're locked in unless you can increase volumes dramatically on our revenues. And there's a fundamental break and disconnect. And you're correct. I think 2022 came along and we've said several times, and I've said many, many times, yeah, it should be the worst year we have ever seen. I hope we never see it again, that kind of a thing. And you're always hoping for that classic, you know, V-shaped recovery. I would describe most of the recoveries as U-shaped. And unfortunately for some, they're kind of L-shaped. They're not quite recovering just yet. So a little spoiler alert, we've kind of run the numbers on our medians and we'll get those out the door pretty soon. Operating margins, just to focus on one measure, did improve, but boy, they did not improve as much as we had really thought earlier in the year. And that has to do with the fact that, you know, A, margins are still very compressed for all the reasons we just mentioned. And then B, most of the improvement that we saw in 2023 was in the back half of the year. And so we're talking like the last two quarters. And audits come in all throughout the year. So if you have someone who's got an audit in June or March or sometime like that, they're still showing a lot of losses. And the people that made it up are those 930, 1231 audits. And it wasn't really enough to move the median per se. I can tell you, if you look at just the 1231 audits, it's a much different perspective. It actually exceeded our expectations. So, you know, when we've been doing this a long time, right? Usually the fact of when your year-end audit comes along is not a factor. It's been an incredible factor the last couple of years to see when your year-end is and what that does to the median numbers, quite frankly. But we're still watching that rebound, and 2024 is showing some good signs. But I will caveat that and hedge just a little bit. I do think some of the margins that we're beginning to see are a little bit conflated with what I'd call one-time events, FEMA money coming in, 340B settlement coming in. And I've yet to really be able to tease out, if you will, what's the true underlying new run rate and what does that look like and how does that shape up for 2024 and beyond?
Sure. Great response there, Kevin. So let's talk a bit about the core credit driver. So as Fitch is looking at a healthcare system entity, what drives your credit rating or a system's credit rating, Kevin?
Yeah, I always tell people, look, credit ratings 101, if you will, is like three legs of a stool. And some people maybe have four legs of the stool, depending upon the stool they're using. But the first thing we really look at is, who are you and the market you're in? And not even talking about numbers, you know, what's a better credit risk? If you're the dominant player in a high growth, meaning population growth market with really good payer mix, and, you know, the future looks bright. Maybe you're in a university town or a state capital town. And so I live in Texas, so I'm kind of mentally pulling up Austin in my head. You know, the Austin area just grows and grows and grows, and it's a great market to be in. And if you dominated the Austin market, now let's look somewhere else, you know, a town that maybe the major employers closed up. You're 10% of the market share, your payer mix is deteriorating, et cetera, et cetera. Not even talking about numbers, like, well, which one where would you put your money? Which one's the stronger credit? And you say, of course, the market I just made up, the Austin market versus this hypothetical market that I just talked about. So that sort of fits into, you know, bucket number one. Bucket number two is your operations. You know, can you make money on your book of business? And if you've had a rough go of it, yeah, okay, we're not going to hold you to that forever, but what is that recovery plan and how long does it take? And again, does it shape up as a V, a U, or an L? And what does it look like? And do you get back to pre-pandemic margins? We kind of balance that out with your capital needs. So a lot of people have turned down that dial on CapEx as the operations have kind of been turned down just a little bit. And that's okay for a limited period of time. If that becomes the norm, then you start to worry about are you aging yourself out of a competitive position? So we balance those two things. That's why I sometimes say it's two legs, three legs. And the last thing, and it's last, and I say maybe most important, is that balance sheet strength. And if you had to really boil it down to balance sheet strength, I would say if you had to say, and I always hate saying this, but I do it anyway, one single measure that Fitch likes the most over anything else, it's cash to debt. In theory, look, operations can go up and down for pandemic reasons or labor demic reasons, but also for, you know, a bad IT install, a strike, you know, some kind of event that causes you to lose operations, boiler chillers bust up, a really bad storm. There's lots of reasons why operations can dip and then rebound over time. But that balance sheet you can protect, and the amount of, you know, borrowings that you do is completely within your control. So we really like that cash to debt. It's been the single measure. If we go back in time and say, what connotates credit stability? Having a good, healthy balance sheet really does buy you a lot of time. So you put those three things together in a bag, you kind of shake it up, and out comes the rating. And certainly, as you can imagine, Mark, look, if you got a great market and a great market share, you're a good operator and a strong balance sheet, you're going to be in that AA category. And if you have none of those things, right, you're going to be struggling to get to investment grade.
Going back to the first one, the first point, Kevin, the who are you, right? Your market share, demographics, population growth, and your geography. How much time do you spend, does Fitch spend, getting their arms around the governance structure of an organization, talking with the management teams, making sure you have a good understanding, a good solid understanding of the leaders within the organization, right? Because the leaders do impact performance, certainly in any business. I think that's true. But governance, management teams, I would assume there's a fair amount of time spent there as well.
There's a lot of time. Look, we do at least annual reviews for every single credit that we touch. We have a mandate to do it 364 days or sooner every single year, every single credit. At the very least, that's going to involve a good hour-long conversation. And frequently, in particular in the hospital space, health system space, we're going to come out and meet with you face-to-face and do site visits. And we encourage, you know, open dialogue all throughout the year. And hospitals are really, you know, by the way, if you're an investor out there, they're very good at disclosure. Most do quarterly disclosure. They put things out on IMA or DAC or wherever you might look. It's usually high quality disclosure, and they keep investors aware of what's going on and what their challenges are, and often have investor calls, which we tune in on, or we have separate calls individually. I think, you know, the governments, I'm going to pivot on you and say it's definitely key, and you want to see a track record, if you will. you know, has this management team built a large hospital successfully? Has this management team, you know, stumbled and yet recovered? And so they've got that skill set or that ability, or has this management team, you know, hit a wall and just, you know, kept digging in, that sort of thing. But I might pivot and say it's maybe a little bit less about a management team per se, as it is, and I'm fascinated by the sort of the overall culture of the organization. And so I often say that, you know, we're really nice people in healthcare. And, you know, sometimes we can solve a problem and then we sort of let our pedals off the, foot off the pedals, off the gas, and a problem reemerges. And the answer is, you know, just don't let up. As I said earlier, margins are hard to come by. And once you get yourself to a place where you're making a margin that you want, that's sustainable for you and your organization, you got to keep pushing as a cultural thing. You've got to keep pushing and never really let up on that. And you see organizations that do that extremely well. And you see others that kind of struggle with that. And we often have been saying that the kind of the credit quality is what we call trifurcating. So some are excelling at all of those things and are producing margins that most people would, you know, hope that was their cash flow margin. They're very jealous of them. We're talking margins in 7, 8, 9% range. There's another group of credits that have been struggling now for years, ever since the pandemic, you know, hit. And we say, well, what's 24 look like? What's 25 look like? And the answer is not that much better, or just incremental. And those ratings are starting to suffer. The vast majority of people kind of going sideways. They're working so hard, and yet the headwinds coming at them are very, very tough. And so we're kind of just treading water from a ratings perspective. So I save a dollar, but I spend a dollar, that sort of a thing. And like I say, it's a very challenging environment to operate in.
Yeah, and actually, you raised a couple good points there, Kevin, that the intensity level that management teams need to operate with every day, every day, they, as you said, they can't take their foot off the gas. You know, they improve, you know, take care of one issue here. There's, you know, 19 other issues they need to deal with tomorrow.
Yes.
And maintaining that level of intensity, quite frankly, is difficult for any human being.
Yes.
And so maybe that's why we see some of that, the foot's on the gas, but boy, let me take a breath here, right? Let me take a breath. And
you're asking the management team and the organization, you're absolutely right, to run a marathon at a sprinter's pace, basically speaking. And that's very hard to do over a sustained time. That's why I say really the individual culture of the organization lends a lot to that. But Mark, you're spot on, right? Every day as a manager, as a leader, and I don't care how far down you go in the org chart, it's like, what can I do to make sure my expenses are under control? What can I do to maximize revenue? What can I do to get the most out of my capital? And by capital, I mean not only physical capital, but your human capital as well, too. And if you're not doing those three things every single day, you're probably not doing it right, right? Because this is, again, like I keep saying, it's a tough environment to operate in. You can't lose focus on that any day, really.
No doubt. No doubt. And the other comment you made, Kevin, and I do applaud, I mean, healthcare organizations out there, you mentioned Emma. If there's a healthcare system anywhere in the country that we want to learn about here at Baker Tilly, you just say we're doing some research, we go out to Emma, the information out, the transparency. I think the transparency is outstanding in this space, and the quality, you mentioned the quality of the packages, I'll call them, that they put together on a quarterly basis or maybe more frequently, depending on what they're doing. It's incredible. It's somewhat unique. And I applaud these systems for that. So tied into the core credit drivers, you talked about them, I guess maybe just for a minute or two, primary causes for a rating downgrade. So if Fitch has concerns, I mean, it has to obviously relate back to the core credit drivers, right? Something's not happening with one of those legs of the stool, the way Fitch would like to see it happening.
That's exactly right. And so there's very little you can do to sort of affect in a meaningful way, you know, on the short term, who you are and what your market is like. And that sort of is, you know, it's not locked in stone, but it's locked down usually year over year. And so the things that generally lend to a downgrade is twofold. One, you know, the operations are very weak, and I'm talking like negative cash flow. And when we ask the questions and dialogue with the management team, you know, say, what's that recovery look like? Well, you know, we hope to get to break even in 3 years. That's a tough answer for us to live with, because it means you're probably fundamentally resetting now your operations at a lower level. And as I indicated before, if that happens, you're probably also fundamentally resetting your ability to reinvest in your plant and make the competitive position of the provider, you know, what it needs to be in the particular markets. That's a hard thing to deal with. The foil to that, or the balance against, that's a balance sheet. So if you've got a fortress balance sheet, you can suffer operational losses a lot longer than someone who has a very thin balance sheet. And so those are the two things that we really look at the most, is the operations and then what buffer exists. and sort of axiomatic, right? Big buffer, we're going to go along for the ride for a lot longer, let you turn this around. Very thin buffer, we're going to be more quick to pull the trigger and say, now you've kind of fundamentally reset at a lower level. And we expect you to be there for a period of time. Not this, you know, one up, one down, or, you know, we always talk downgrades, but it's the same thing for upgrades. If you have one great year and you go up, we're probably not going to upgrade you until you show that's our new normal, so to speak. And so again, works both ways, but operations and then sort of the buffer that your balance sheet gives you, those are going to be your primary movers, if you will, of upgrades and downgrades. And then really kind of that fundamental reset. If we think you're a different rating or a different rating category, that's when we need to move on a rating. And we do like to signal with positive and negative outlooks. We think this is going to happen. About a 1 in 2 chance is usually what we mean when we say a positive or a negative outlook. And we try to outline those things in our sensitivities and say, this is what we're looking for. And we try to let, again, readers and investors know that this is the information that we're following and focusing on most clearly.
Good deal, Kevin. So let's pivot to physician practice entities. So I'm curious how Fitch views physician practice entities and say the obligated group structure. And I think everyone in the healthcare system space, you know, realizes that the physician practice column in a consolidated financial statement, generally the bottom line has brackets around it. And those numbers inside those brackets can be pretty darn big. But that entity, that physician practice entity, is feeding the system, right? Feeding the system to a certain extent. And I know a number of our clients, healthcare systems across the country, Kevin, are certainly focused on improving the financial results of the physician practice component of their system. But again, that's not easy, right? Well, nothing's easy. Nothing's easy in the healthcare system space when you're talking about improving financial performance. But how does Fitch view those physician practice entities and the relationship to the system and how those entities and their performance might impact ratings?
Yeah, great question. And first thing I'd say is, look, when we look at an organization, whether it's in or out of the obligated group legally, for us, it's all in. And the classic example is one hospital and one big medical group. And they say, well, look, we just want the hospital rated. And that's our obligated group. You can ignore the losses of the investment over here at the physicians. And we're like, no, they're yours. And they're part and parcel of your business. And you're intimately linked together. We're including it, which means your margins are coming down, that sort of a thing. So that's sort of the quintessential example of the legals don't matter as much as we sort of the optics and the logistics of how things, you know, normally work. But certainly if you go back in time and, you know, physicians, when I first started this out 25 odd years ago, like a lot of doctors were not employed. That was the norm. And so you didn't see that column, so to speak. And as the generations have gone on, I mean, two things have happened. People, A, want to be employed. And then B, you talk to, you know, CFOs, CEOs that have been around for a while and say, look, the average productivity has come down as well, too. So people maybe my father's age that were doctors, you know, I hear this phrase a lot. I need like two people to replace the productivity of that other individual. So I kind of need more, if you will. That's generally a trade-off most people will take. If I sort of lock down my doctors and I employ them, then, you know, I know what services I can offer and I can try to control those costs and I can sort of keep it all within the house versus having to send maybe someone outside my system or my provider base and risk not bringing them back in. But, you know, the classic phrase is leakage, which I've always hated that phrase, like keepage, I think is a better phrase. But you're absolutely right. It takes investment. It takes losses. Some of that really is just accounting, where things book, that sort of a thing. But as you look at your doctors, you know, you need to do two things. You know, am I the high end of the loss or investment per doc or the low end? How do I drive it from the high end to the low end? And you also have to understand there's always a ramp up phase. And so a lot of times we'll see, wow, the loss per physician really increased. What happened? Say, oh, we hired, you know, 300 new physicians. They're on their first year of the contract. Okay, that takes a little bit of time to get there, but the expectation is you'll get that, you know, from the 95th percentile down to the 55th percentile down to the 35th percentile, that sort of a thing. So we always say pay very close attention to your, you know, your losses and your loss leaders. And sometimes you make those trade-offs, quite frankly. But productivity is the earmark. And I've been doing this a long time, talking to a lot of physician groups, and you know, I still hear, you know, we're finally moving them onto a productivity environment. Wow. We've been doing that for about 16, 18, 20 years now. It's time. It's absolutely time. And so, you know, I applaud you for doing that. It's a little late, but it's time. So there's work to be done there. But I think really it is what it is, as we say. And the best thing you can do is minimize it, control it, and make sure you're getting out of it what you want out of that relationship and really strive for the productivity.
Very well said, Kevin. So financial ratios. We talked a little bit about, you know, you mentioned balance sheet strength, operating margin, liquidity. When we talk about balance sheet strength, you know, that cash to debt ratio. So some of the financial ratios beyond cash to debt, Kevin, maybe days cash on hand, debt service coverage, operating margin. Are there any other financial ratios that Fitch looks at in a pretty critical way, or are they the key ones? I know that, you know, we participate on the senior living side, on the life plan community side, with Karf and Ziegler putting out a ratio trends publication annually. And, you know, there's a number of ratios. There's 15 plus ratios in the publication, and it's ratio overload, I'd like to call it. And sometimes I just focus when clients say to me, hey, Mark, what are the key ones we should focus on? I mean, I give them probably five and say, focus on these five, monitor them and keep track of them. Not that the other 10 plus ratios aren't important, but just what's your perspective on other financial ratios?
Yeah, you make a good point. I remember when I started doing this job, you know, years ago, the first thing I did, I was at Standard & Poor's at the time, was print out about 50 reports and read them all. And I noticed the same thing you did. There were about six ratios that were in every single report. So I'm like, all right, those are the ones I need to really become familiar with. Every, you know, rating agency has got its own favorites, but you really hit upon the ones. We're looking at operating margin, but more than operating margin is operating EBITDA margin. A lot of people call that cash flow. It's subtly different, but good enough as an example. But what's kind of that free cash flow, so to speak? So we tend to look at that a little bit more focused than we do the margin itself, is the operating EBITDA margin. We do like cash to debt, I still think is the strongest one. Sometimes we call it cash to adjusted debt, and that's making sure that we bring in things like, you know, long-term leases or pension liabilities, any promise to pay. The gap between cash to debt and cash to adjusted debt is starting to shrink, if you will. The leases now are captured, obviously, on the audits, and so it really is just all debt to us, quite frankly. We do reference from time to time days cash on hand. We're not really enamored with it, to be honest with you. Again, doing this 20-plus years, I get phone calls all the time, Kevin, I got 200 days cash on hand. What's my rating? And I have to go, I have no idea. I have no clue whatsoever. I mean, I've got triple B's at 200 and I got double A's with double A's. So it's very hard for us to tell. And every organization's unique, right? And so your structure might look different. Big medical group, maybe a health plan. We've got a couple of places that are like pharmacy plans. All that expands your expense base, which lowers your day's cash on hand. Doesn't make it any weaker. Just makes it different than the median, so to speak. And then, you know, probably, you know, the last two that we look at a lot is coverage levels. I'm going to say, not that we're not enamored with it, we like coverage, obviously, but our ratios very frequently, almost always maybe, differ than the legal documents based on what we discussed earlier, that obligated structure and who's in it, who's not in it, quite frankly. We tend to look at MADs versus actual. And again, the legals, you know, bondholders will say, I don't match up with you. I'm like, well, there's a reason for that. Let's walk through it. So we tend not to get too excited about that. And then the last one is my own personal carryover from my days at Standard & Poor's, is just the classic leverage metric, debt to capitalization. I find that to be a very useful sort of, you know, big picture ratio for me to look at to really tell me what's going on from a debt perspective, quite frankly. So those really big four or five that we look at all the time.
Great. No, appreciate that. And Kevin, the one point you made there, alluded to there, when you had a provider call you, hey, we got 200 days cash on hand, what's my rating? You know, you can't draw a conclusion. I think your point is just by looking at one ratio, right? There's multiple ratios. They all mean different things. And you have to kind of look at them in the aggregate. And that'll give you, I guess, more perspective on where the organization has been and where the organization might be going. So Kevin, just briefly, I got two final questions for you here. So bear with me. We're coming to the end of our time. M&A activity. Continues to be very pervasive across the sector. You know, healthcare provide, you know, all types of providers, right? Healthcare systems, certainly key providers in the overall provider space. How does M&A activity impact ratings? How do you view it? I guess, you know, from my perspective, there could be certain providers that, you know, maybe need to pace themselves a little bit more effectively relative to their growth strategy. Sometimes, you know, scale is important. But too much scale too quick can actually be damaging to potentially to an organization. So how do you view M&A activity and the pace with which, I guess that's my question, the pace with which a system is executing the growth strategy?
Yeah, it's a great question. I appreciate you asking it, because it's and I don't expect any violins to play for the bond analysts or anything out there, but M&A is probably the most difficult thing that we deal with from a rating perspective. Hey, I'm doubling my size, I'm doubling my market share, but it's going to cost me X number of billions of dollars. What do you do with the rating? That's a hard analytic discussion for us to have and figure out what the right answer is and when to pull the trigger on the ratings. So let me just back up a little bit. M&A activity, what we're seeing predominantly is what I might call a little bit more regionalization, if that makes any sense. So certainly what's been in the news, almost every time you pull up a Becker's article is some activity going on with Ascension, for example. So the most recent thing is, not completely, but effectively getting out of a big portion of the Illinois market. Before that, there was some activity down in Alabama. Before that, it was some activity in the Wisconsin market, or Michigan market, excuse me. And so you're seeing, if you will, some strengthening of other organizations' density in those markets as Ascension has exited those markets. And Ascension, by extension, is trying to strengthen their density or their meaningfulness, if you will, in the markets that they feel they have a long-term, you know, foothold in and can offer value and serve their mission, so to speak. And you've seen similar activity, I think, with Common Spirit is another one. But it generally very, I would say, very relative to sort of, you know, regional strengthening of your position or saying, you know what, we've been in this market for a while. We're going to unstrengthen ourselves in that market, exit it, and focus elsewhere. And I think that's going to continue. The other pattern I think that we're seeing is a lot of the for-profit entities are sort of, you know, shedding off, if you will, some of their assets. Same kind of idea, basically. Look, I've got two hospitals in this market. It's a huge market. I've got no density there. I got no market presence. Let me exit that. And a not-for-profit provider coming along and picking it up. You struck upon a chord, like, you know, what happens to the balance sheet? What happens to the ratings? A lot of these opportunities, sometimes we say right opportunity, wrong time. You know, I'm coming off a 22, 23. My margins are low. I'm picking up an asset. It's great. It's a great price, but it's really stretching out my balance sheet. And hence that cushion gets smaller. And again, what do we do from a rating perspective? Do we say, well, the cushion's now gone. We're going to downgrade you, even though long term we think this is a really good move. Maybe we should upgrade you. Like I say, that's probably the most difficult thing we can do. The last thing I'll add is just we get this question a lot. So just to preempt you on it. You know, what do you do with ratings per se if you rate both of them, for example, which is pretty common, I hope, because we want to rate everything. But we generally, we follow the money and we follow the legals, so to speak. So if you own Hospital A, then your recourse is to follow all the way up to Hospital A. If something really goes wrong and you're looking to recoup your money and that sort of thing. And if you own Hospital B, it's the same thing. It's not Hospital A, B, whatever they call themselves. So until the organizations make an omelet, basically, issue debt together, where it's so scrambled up, you can't differentiate between the two, or they so effectively merge, if you will. And I would say like Advocate Atrium, when they came together, like merged before they ever came together kind of a thing, that we really harmonize those ratings very quickly. So it's not uncommon for us to keep ratings outstanding and separate for a period of time until there's this harmonization, this integration that takes place, or there's an event like a debt issuance that mixes the ratings. So you know what? Now we're all one rating, that kind of a thing.
Well, good deal, Kevin. Well, hey, closing up our discussion here, I wanted to end with strategy, talking about, you know, we talked about industry challenges, core credit drivers, downgrades, physician practice entities, a lot of operational type things. But, you know, healthcare systems need to continue to focus on future strategy and exit, whether it's a growth strategy or they've got other strategies they're trying to execute. So what are the one or two, maybe three key strategies, Kevin, that you're seeing healthcare systems execute as you're talking with them across the country?
No, I think, again, this is a great question. In the last couple of years, we've been focusing on putting out fires, right? And again, first pandemic and then labor issues and just, you know, finding staff and what can we do every day just to keep the home fires burning, so to speak. And what's gotten lost a little bit has been, well, what do you want to be when you grow up, that long-term strategy? So I see a renewed focus on that. When we talk to management teams, they're sort of back to basic blocking and tackling and back to that classic 3-year, 5-year, 10-year plan looking forward. I think some of the trends that are emerging is what I'm going to call essentiality or density within a market. And you know, that's a classic strategy, right? Because unfortunately, we see in the U.S., right, this competitive pressure between the payers and the providers. That's not really alleviating anytime soon. And so with some size and scale and with some density, then you can kind of go, you know, head to head with the payers and say, hey, we're 50% of the market, or we're the only ones that offer neuro or oncology or cardio, and we are a must-have, and hence we want, you know, a bump of, you know, 4%, 5%, 8%, whatever the number might be, but having some leverage, if you will, against the payers. And the side benefit is that size and scale and efficiency that if operated properly, you can certainly get. I would say revenue diversification really on two fronts, anything outside the inpatient setting, quite frankly. So a lot of ambulatory, a lot of urgent care, a lot of, you know, community MOBs are going up. It's just making it easy about access. And how fast can I get you in, particularly for primary care? And of course, you know, follow up for specialty. If I can do that better than my competitors can, I got you. Right? And I can bring you into the system. And then I would also think anything that you can do, because look, it's a low margin business we've talked about. Are there things you can invest in that might also generate some extra margin for you. And we've seen all sorts of things. We've seen companies invest in, for-profit ventures that go public, and isn't this great? And we can sell off our share. But get a little creative, I think, with that excess cash that you might have laying around, so to speak. And then I think, maybe the last thing that we see focus on, that's sort of that relentless, you got to keep the gas on the pedal. You just got to keep moving. Right now in this environment, right, every dollar is a little bit more precious than it used to be a few years ago. It's harder to come by, it's harder to keep, and I got to keep spending, sort of keep up with the Joneses. And this is a very capital intensive world. And right now, I would say the thing that we're seeing the pressing of the pedal on, you usually can't go 5 minutes in a management meeting without the word AI coming up. And so technology is the big spin and the big topic that we're hearing about. And it used to just be, what's your EMR, ERP system? Are you Epic? Are you Cerner? Are you Meditech? And how's that going if you optimize it? Now it's, what are you doing with AI? And how is that impacting your clinicals or your non-clinical areas? What do you see as the next steps going down? How can that get you more productivity out of potentially less staff as the population, unfortunately, starts to age? And more people leave the workforce, right, when an aged population needs more help. And so I tell people all the time, 2030, circled on my calendar. That's when the last baby boomer turns 65, which means right when we need more care for a group of the population, we probably have less people in the workforce, right? And that's a, I don't want to call it a perfect storm, but it's certainly some bad weather. And we need to get that running start. We're probably going to get there through technology, through AI, and through different models of care delivery. So those are probably the big three themes that we're seeing all of the time these days.
Good deal, Kevin. And actually, you hit on a couple things there. We could do a whole separate podcast on just technology and AI, and do a whole separate podcast on the boomers coming into the system and what's that going to mean, the change in our payer mix for these systems, and how that's going to impact their business. We don't have time to get into all that today. We could just keep talking here, Kevin.
We can keep rolling on. I mean, sure, absolutely.
I don't know if our listeners would stay with us, though. I don't know if they'd be with us, Kevin, if we did that. But
that's right.
But hey, the other thing, I just one point I'll make, and then we'll shut things down here. You mentioned revenue diversification. Certainly, we see providers doing that. Different types of healthcare providers. Certainly, systems are doing it as well. But we also think that providers, systems need to be careful there, right? That sometimes you don't want to be everything to everyone. And focusing on your core competencies, sometimes if you spread yourselves too thin and you get into something that's maybe not a core competency because there's another system in your market that is the go-to, they're the provider of choice for this particular, maybe it's ortho, maybe it's whatever the case may be. So I think revenue diversification is certainly a strategy, but I think you got to be careful too there. Does that make sense, Kevin?
That resonates a lot. And I often call Ascension out in a good way because I think that's exactly what they're doing. They're a huge system, 21 states, I should know this off the top of my head. And I think they've gotten to a point where it's, look, we can't be all things to all people in all places, really being key. So let's focus on those markets and those areas where we can be what we want to be and sort of stay in our lane in those markets and excel at that. And I think you're absolutely spot on in that. Not so much, completely stay in your lane, but don't just grow just for growth's sake. That almost always is a bad thing to do, quite frankly. When you're talking about a merger, you should be saying no 15 to 1 to saying yes, kind of a thing. Most of the opportunities come in aren't going to be a good cultural fit, aren't really going to add what you need to further your mission, so to speak. And look, I kind of live by that myself. You were kind enough to mention, Margaret a minute ago. Technically I'm over hospitals and I'm over long-term care, but the reality is I stay in my lane. I know hospitals and I know health systems. You want to talk long-term care? We got a great team of Margaret and Gary and Rebecca. Bring them on and have them talk about that. Stay in their lane. I need to know about it, but absolutely, sure. Spend time and energy where you can do and add the most value. Absolutely.
No, fantastic. Well, Kevin, the last 40 minutes have just flown by. Thank you so much for joining our podcast. Again, I'm sure our audience will appreciate your perspective. And I want to thank our listeners for joining this podcast. If you found this episode useful and would like to listen to more episodes about hot topics in the healthcare industry, please subscribe to our Healthy Outcomes podcast or learn more by visiting us at bakertilly.com. Thanks for joining me again, Kevin.
Always a pleasure, and thanks for your time today, Martin.
Thank you for listening. To receive notifications when new episodes are available, please subscribe on whichever platform you get your podcasts. For additional resources, check out bakertilly.com.